with my tongue. Finally, our lips will meet. And it will be hot. Fucking scorching. And she'll forget all about the reasons why we shouldn't. Our mutual place of work, her stupid fiancé. The only thing she'll be thinking of is me and the things my expert hands will be doing to her. I have a couch in my office. It's suede, not leather. The suede stain? Hope not. Because that's where we'll end up, on that sorrowfully underused couch. Now let me ask you this. Have you seen those commercials that say how life can change in an instant? Yes, yes, I'm going somewhere with this. Just bear with me. You know the ones I'm talking about, don't you? Where the happy family is driving down Main Street on a bright sunny day and then, bam, head-on collision with a semi. And daddy goes flying out the window because he didn't have his seatbelt buckled. They're designed to scare the shit out of us, and they do. But the fact remains, they are also chock full of truth. Our goals, our priorities, can change instantaneously, usually when we least expect it. So, after 2 weeks of strategizing and fantasizing, I'm sure that Kate Brooks will be my next one-nighter. I can't remember wanting someone as much as I want her. I've definitely never waited for a woman as long as I've waited for her. But the point is, for me, it's a done deal, a foregone conclusion. Not an if, but simply a when. And then, on Monday afternoon, my father calls me into his office. Sit down, son. There's some business I'd like to discuss. My father often calls me in here to talk about things he's not yet ready to share with the rest of the staff. I just got off the phone with Saul Anderson. He's looking to diversify. He's coming to the city next month to shop around for ideas. Saul Anderson is a media tycoon. Big money. The kind of guy who makes Rupert Murdoch look like a peon. Got a napkin? 'Cause I think I'm drooling. Next month? Okay, I can work with that. No problem. I feel the excitement pumping in my veins. This is how a shark must feel after somebody dumps a great big bucket of bloody chum in the water. It's a rush. Drew, my father interrupts, but my mind's too busy whirling with ideas to hear him. Any clue what he's looking to get into? I mean, the possibilities are pretty endless. Son, my father tries again. You can see it coming, can't you? Yet I ramble on. Cable stations are cash cows. Social media's in the toilet right now, so we could pick up some real bargains. Film production is always a safe bet, and that would cut down on the overhead when they replay on his own network. Drew, I'm going to give the account to Kate Brooks. Hold the fucking phone. Care to repeat that for me? What? She's good, Drew. I'm telling you, she's damn good. She's been here for 2 weeks. Dogs are territorial. You know that, right? That's why at the park they seem to have a never-ending supply of piss, which they insist on stopping every 4 seconds to spread around. It's because they believe it's their park, and they want the other dogs to know it, to know that they were there first. It's the nonverbal way of pretty much saying, fuck off, find your own park. Men are the same way. Not that I'm going to piss a circle around my desk or anything, but this firm is mine. I've nurtured these clients since they were tiny corporations. I've watched, like a proud papa, as they grew to sturdy conglomerates. I've wined them. I've dined them. I've put in hour after hour, years of sleepless nights. My job isn't just what I do, it's who I am. And I will be damned if Kate Brooks is going to walk her ass in here and take that away from me. No matter how fine an ass it might be. Yes, my father says. And have you seen some of the stuff she's come up with in the last 2 weeks? She's the first one in and the last one to leave, every day. She's fresh and thinks outside the box. She's come up with some of the most innovative investments I've ever seen. My instincts are telling me to give her the ball and see what she'll do with it. What are the early warning signs of dementia, exactly? She'll friggin' fumble. That's what she'll do, I yell. But I know from experience dramatics will get me nowhere with my father. so I pinched the bridge of my nose to try and calm down. Okay, Dad, I hear what you're saying. But Saul Anderson is not a client you pass off to someone just to see if they can cut it. He's someone you give to your best and brightest, someone you know you can take them all the way to the end zone, and that's me. Isn't it? I wonder as uncertainty clouds his features. As my father's silence stretches on, my stomach twists in my gut. It's not that I have a daddy complex or anything, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy the pride my father takes in my performance at the office. I'm his right-hand man, his go-to guy. When we're down by two with five left on the clock, you can bet your ass I'm the only one John Evans will pass the ball to. Or at least I used to be. I'm accustomed to having his undivided confidence. The fact that confidence seems to be wavering is, well, it fucking hurts. Tell you what, he sighs. We've got a month. Come up with a presentation. Have Kate do the same. Whoever can knock my socks off gets a crack at Anderson. I should be insulted, really. What he's asking is the equivalent of telling an Oscar winner he's got to audition to play a frigging extra. But I don't argue. I'm too busy planning my next move. So, you see what I was saying about life? Just like that, Kate Brooks has changed from a woman I couldn't wait to do the nasty dance with to someone I can't wait to crush under my boot. My adversary. My competition. My enemy. It's not her fault, I know. Now ask me if I care. Nope. Not even a little. In full-out combat mode, I return to headquarters, otherwise known as my office. I give Aaron a few orders and work the rest of the afternoon. Around 6 o'clock, I have Aaron call Kate into my office. Always keep the home field advantage. Play on your own turf. Remember that. She comes in and sits down, her expression unreadable. What's up, Drew? Her hair is down, framing her face in a long, glossy curtain. For a second, I imagine what it would feel like tickling my chest, draping across my thighs. I shake my head. Focus, Evans, focus. She's wearing a dark burgundy suit with matching heels. Kate is into the high heels. I think because she's naturally petite, the height advantage they give makes her feel more confident at the office. Guys love heels. We associate them with all kinds of fantastic sexual positions. If you want a man to notice you, you cannot go wrong with a pair of shiny 4-inch stilettos, I swear. As my eyes continue to roam over her from head to toe, a problem, shall we say, arises. Although my mind recognizes that Kate Brooks is now my rival, apparently my cock hasn't gotten the memo. And he, judging from his reaction, still wants to make friends. So I picture Miss Gurgle, my fifth-grade science teacher, in my mind. She was a beast of a woman. A retired female wrestler. Not the bikini kind. She had a mole on her right cheek that was so big, we were sure it was the head of a twin that hadn't separated in the womb. It was disgusting, but strangely hypnotic at the same time. You couldn't help but stare at it. It jiggled when she spoke, like a bowl full of jello. I shudder slightly, but it does the trick. All's clear down below. Saul Anderson is coming to the city next month, I say at last. Her brows rise. Saul Anderson? Really? Really, I tell her. All business. No more pleasure for her. My father would like you to put together a mock presentation, a run-through. As if you were really going to pitch a client. He thinks it would be good practice for you. I know. You think I'm a scumbag. I'm not even giving her a fair chance. Well, get over it. This is business. And in business, like war, all is fair. I expect her to be excited. I expect her to be grateful. She isn't either of these. Her lips press together in a tight line, and her expression turns serious.
Practice, huh?
That's right. It's not a big deal. Don't put yourself out. Just throw something together for him. A hypothetical, She folds her arms in front of her chest and tilts her head to the side.
That's interesting, Drew. Considering your father just told me he hasn't decided who's getting Anderson yet. That it would come down to you or me, whoever put together the more impressive strategy. The way he explained it, it sounded like a very big deal.
Uh-oh. When I was 12, Matthew and I snagged a Hustler magazine from a convenience store. My father caught me with it in my room before I had the chance to hide it under my mattress. The look on my face at this moment is very similar to the one I wore then. Busted.
Playing a little dirty, are we?
She asks, as her eyes narrow with suspicion. I shrug. Don't get ahead of yourself, sweetheart. Anderson's coming to me. My father's just throwing you a bone.
A bone?
Yeah. You've had your lips attached to his ass since you started. I'm surprised he can still stand up straight. He figures this will get you off his back for a little while. Always strike first. Remember that, too. The team who scores first, they're almost always the team who wins. Look it up if you don't believe me. Yes, I'm trying to shake her confidence. Yes, I'm trying to throw her off her game. Sue me. I told you my history. I told you how I grew up. I never had to share my toys. I don't plan on sharing my clients. Ask any four-year-old. Sharing sucks. When she speaks, her tone is lethal, sharp as a fucking machete.
If we're going to work together, Drew, I think we should get a few things straight. I'm not your sweetheart. My name is Kate. Catherine. Use it. And I'm not a kiss-ass. I don't have to be. My work speaks for itself. My intelligence, my determination, that's what got your father to notice me. And obviously he thinks you're a bit lacking in those departments, since he's considering me for Anderson.
Ouch. Certainly goes right for the jugular, doesn't she?
And I know women probably fall all over themselves to get your attention and one of your charming smiles, she continues. But that's not going to happen with me. I don't plan on being one of your groupies or a notch on your bedpost, so you can save your lines, your smile, and your bullshit for someone else.
She rises to her feet and rests her hands on the edge of my desk, leaning over. Hey, you know if I just sit up a little bit more, I could see right down her blouse. I love that spot on a woman. That valley just between her.
Stop it.
Mentally, I slap myself, and she goes on.
You're used to being number one around here. You're used to being Daddy's special little man. Well, there's a new player in town. Deal with it. I've worked damn hard to get this job, and I plan on making a name for myself. You don't like sharing the spotlight? Too bad. You can either make room for me at the table, or I'll step on you when you get in my way. Either way, you can bet your ass I'll get there.
She turns to go, but then looks back at me, her lips curved into a saccharine smile.
Oh, and I would say good luck with Anderson, but I won't bother. All the luck in Ireland isn't going to help you. Saul Anderson is mine, sweetheart.
And with that, she turns and stalks out of my office, right past Matthew and Jack, who stand in my doorway, open-mouthed.
Well, damn, Matthew says.
Okay, is anyone else turned on right now? Jack asks.
Seriously, I got wood here, 'cause that,
he points in the direction Kate just went, that was fucking hot. It was hot. Kate Brooks is a beautiful woman. But when she's pissed off, she's spectacular. Stephen walks in with a cup of coffee in his hand. Seeing the looks on our faces, he asks,
What? What'd I miss?
Matthew all too happily tells him,
Drew is losing his touch. He just got verbally bitch-slapped by a girl.
Stephen nods grimly and says,
Welcome to my world, man.
I ignore the Three Stooges. My attention is still focused on the challenge Kate just threw down. The testosterone pumping through my body screams for victory. Not just a win, but a shutout. Nothing short of a full, uncontested knockout will do. Chapter 5. And so it began. The Olympic Games of Investment Banking. I'd like to say it was a mature contest between two professional and highly intelligent colleagues. I'd like to say it was friendly. I'd like to, but I won't, because I'd be lying. Remember my father's comment, the one about Kate being the first one in the office and the last to leave? It stuck in my mind that whole night. See, getting Anderson wasn't just about putting on the best presentation, coming up with the best ideas. That's what Kate thought, but I knew better. The man is my father, after all. We share the same DNA. It was also about reward. Who was more dedicated? Who had earned it? And I was determined to show my father that I was that who. So, the next day I came in an hour early. Later that morning, when Kate arrives, I don't look up from my desk, but I feel it when she walks past my door. See the look on her face? The slight pause in her step as she sees me? The scowl that comes when she realizes she's the second to come in? See the steel in her eyes? Obviously, I'm not the only one playing for keeps. On Wednesday, then, I arrive at the same time to find Kate typing away at her desk. She looks up when she sees me. She smiles cheerily and waves. I don't think so. The day after that, I come in another half hour earlier, and so on. Are you seeing the pattern here? By the time the next Friday rolls around, I find myself walking up to the front of the building at 4:30. 4:30! It's still dark. And as I get to the door of the building, guess who I see across from me, arriving at the exact same time? Kate. Can you hear the hiss in my voice? I hope you can. We stand there looking each other in the eyes, clutching our extra-large caffeine-filled double mocha cappuccinos in our hands. Kind of reminds you of one of those old westerns, doesn't it? You know the ones I'm talking about. Where the two guys walk down the empty street at high noon for a shootout. If you listen hard, you can probably hear the lonely call of a vulture in the background. At the same moment, Kate and I drop our beverages and make a mad dash for the door. In the lobby, she pushes the elevator button furiously while I head for the stairs. Genius that I am, I figure I can take them three at a time. I'm almost 6 feet, long legs. The only problem with this, of course, is that my office is on the 40th floor. Idiot. As I finally reach our floor, panting and sweating, I see Kate leisurely leaning against her office door, coat off, a glass of water in hand. She offers it to me, along with that breathtaking smile of hers. It makes me want to kiss her and strangle her at the same time. I've never been into S&M, but I'm beginning to see its benefits. Here you go. You look like you could use this, Drew. She hands me the glass and flounces away. Have a nice day. Right. Sure, I'll do that. 'Cause it's just starting out great so far. I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but I'll go over it again just so we're clear. For me, work trumps sex. Every time. Always. Except for Saturday nights. Saturday is club night. Guy night. Hook up with gorgeous girls and screw their brains out night. Despite my renewed diligence at work, as I vie against Kate for Anderson, my Saturday night does not change. It is sacred. What? Do you want me to go frigging insane? All work and no play makes Drew a cranky boy. So, that Saturday night I meet a brunette divorcee at a bar called Rendezvous. I found myself gravitating toward brunettes for the last couple weeks. You don't need to be Sigmund Freud to figure that one out. Anyway, it's a great night. Divorced women have a lot of pent-up anger, a lot of buried frustration, which never fails to translate into a good, long, hard fuck. It's exactly what I'm looking for and just what I need. But, for some reason, the next day I'm still tense, edgy. It's like I'd asked the waitress for a beer, and she brought me a soda. Like I ate a sandwich when what I really wanted was a nice juicy steak. I'm full, but far from satisfied. At the time, I don't know why I feel like that. But I bet you do, don't you? To do my job properly, I need books, lots of them. The laws, codes, and regulations involved in what I do are detailed and change frequently. Luckily for me, my firm has the most extensive collection of pertinent reference materials in the city. Well, except for maybe the city library. But have you seen that place? It's like a frigging castle. It takes forever to find out where something should be, and when you do, it's most likely checked out already. My firm's private library is much more convenient. So, Tuesday afternoon, I'm at my desk working with one of the aforementioned references, when who should grace me with her presence? Yep, the lovely Kate Brooks. She is looking particularly delicious today. Her voice is hesitant.
Hey, Drew? I was looking for this year's technical analysis of the financial markets, and it's not in the library. Do you have it, by any chance?
She bites her lip in the adorable way she does whenever she's nervous. The book in question is actually sitting right on my desk, and I'm just about done with it. I could be the better man, the bigger person, and give it to her. But you don't really think I'm going to do that, do you? Have you learned nothing from our past conversations? Yeah, I do have it, actually, I tell her. She smiles.
Oh, great. When do you think you'll be finished with it?
I look to the ceiling, seemingly deep in thought. Not sure. 4, maybe 5 weeks. Weeks? She asks, gazing down at me. Can you tell she's annoyed? I know what you're thinking. If I want to eventually, after the whole Anderson thing is over, do the horizontal tango with Kate, why don't I try being just a little bit nicer to her? And you're right. That does make sense. But the Anderson thing isn't over yet. And as I've said before, this, my friends, is war. I'm talking DEFCON 1, gloves off, I'll knock you down even if you are a girl, war. You wouldn't give a bullet to a sniper who's got his gun aimed at your forehead, would you? Plus, Kate is too damn hot when she's angry for me to pass up a chance to see her fired up again, just for my own twisted pleasure. I look her up and down appreciatively as I speak before giving her my patented boyish smile that almost all women are helpless against. Kate, of course, not being one of those women. Figures. Well, I suppose if you ask nicely, and throw in a shoulder rub while you're at it, I might be persuaded to give it to you now. The truth is, I would never demand anything that resembled a sexual favor in exchange for something work-related. I'm a lot of things. A bottom-feeding scumbag like that isn't one of them. But that last comment could definitely be construed as flat-out old-school sexual harassment. And if Kate ever told my father I'd said that to her, Jesus H. Christ, he would fire me faster than you could say, up shit creek without a paddle. Then he'd most likely knock me on my ass for good measure. I'm walking one high fucking tightrope here. Yet, though the possibility exists, I'm 99.9% sure that Kate won't rat me out. She's too much like me. She wants to win. She wants to beat me, and she wants to do it all on her own. She puts her hands on her hips and opens her mouth to rip into me, most likely to describe just where I can shove my book, I'd guess. I lean back with an amused smile, eagerly anticipating the explosion that never comes. She tilts her head to the side, closes her mouth, and says, "You know what? Never mind." And with that, she walks out the door. Huh. Kind of anticlimactic, don't you think? I thought so, too. Wait for it. A few hours later, I'm down in the library looking for an enormous reference titled Commercial and Investment Banking and the International Credit and Capital Markets. All of Harry Potter would fit into one chapter of this sucker. I scan the stacks for where it should be, but it's not there. Somebody else must have it. I turn my attention to a much smaller, but just as important, volume called Investment Management Regulation, 4th edition, only to find that it, too, is missing.
What the hell?
I don't believe in coincidences. I take the elevator back to the 40th floor and march purposefully through Kate's open door. I don't see her right away. That's because stacked on and around her desk, in neat skyscraper-high columns, are books. About 3 dozen of them. For a moment, I freeze, my mouth open and my eyes wide with shock. Then, inanely, I wonder how the hell she got them all up here. Kate weighs 110 at best. There have got to be several hundred pounds of pages in this room. It's then that her shiny dark head emerges over the horizon, and once again she smiles, like a cat with a mouthful of bird. I hate cats. They're kind of evil-looking, don't you think? Like they're just waiting for you to fall asleep so they can smother you with their fur or piss in your ear.
Hi, Drew. Do you need something?
She asks me with phony benevolence. Her fingers tap rhythmically on 2 gigantic hardcovers.
You know, help, advice, directions to the public library.
I swallow my response and frown at her. No, I'm good.
Oh, okay, great. Bye-bye now.
And with that, she disappears back down behind the literary mountain. Brooks, 2. Evans, zip. After that, things get nasty. I'm ashamed to say that both Kate and I sink to new lows in professional sabotage. It never actually wanders over to the realm of the illegal, but it's definitely close. One day I come in to find all the cables missing from my computer. It doesn't do any lasting damage, but I have to wait an hour and a half for the IT guy to show up and reconnect it. The next day, Kate comes in to discover that someone has switched all the labels on her disks and files. Nothing was erased, mind you, but she pretty much has to look through every single one if she wants to find the documents she needs. A few days after that, at a staff meeting, I accidentally spill a glass of water on some information Kate has compiled for my father. Something that probably took her 5 or so hours to put together. Oops, sorry, I say, letting the smirk on my face tell her how very unsorry I am.
It's fine, Mr. Evans, she assures my father as she wipes up the mess. I have another copy in my office.
How very Boy Scoutish of her, don't you think? Later, about halfway through the same meeting, do you know what she does? She fucking kicks me, in the shin, under the table. I groan, and my hands fist reflexively. You all right, Drew? My father asks. I can only nod and squeak, something in my throat. I cough dramatically. See, I'm not about to go crying to Daddy, either. But, sweet Christ, it hurt. You ever been kicked in the shin by a 4-inch pointy shoe? For a man, there is only one area that's more painful to be kicked. And that is a place that dare not speak its name. After the throbbing in my leg dies down a bit, I hide my hand behind some upturned papers while my father's speaking. Then I flip Kate the finger. Immature, I know. But apparently we're now both functioning at the preschool level. So I'm guessing it's okay. Kate sneers at me. Then she mouths, you wish. Well, she's got me there now, doesn't she? We're in the home stretch. A month of mortal combat has passed, and tomorrow is my father's deadline. It's around 11 o'clock, and besides the cleaning service working the night shift, Kate and I are the only ones left in the building. I've had this fantasy 100 times. Though, I have to say, it's never included us in our respective offices, glaring at each other across the hallway, each making the occasional obscene hand gesture. I glance over and see her reviewing her charts. What is she thinking? Is this the Stone Age? Who the hell uses poster board anymore? Anderson is definitely mine. I'm just putting the finishing touches on my own impressive PowerPoint presentation when Matthew walks into my office. He's heading to the bars. Never mind that it's a Wednesday night. That's just Matthew. A few short weeks ago, that was me, too. He looks at me for the longest time, saying nothing. Then he sits on the edge of my desk and says,
"Dude, just fucking do it already."
"What are you talking about?" I ask, my fingers never pausing over the keyboard.
"Have you looked at yourself lately? You need to just walk over there and get it done."
And now he's annoying me. "Matthew, what the hell are you trying to say?" But all he comes back with is,
"You ever see War of the Roses? Is that how you want to end up?"
"I have work to do. I don't have time for this right now." He throws his hands up.
"Fine, I tried. When we find you two in the lobby under the fallen chandelier, I'll tell your mother I friggin' tried."
I stop typing.
"What the fuck do you mean?" "I mean you and Kate. It's obvious you have a thing for her."
I glance over at her office when he says her name. She doesn't look up. "Yeah, I do have a thing for her. An extreme dislike of her. We can't stand each other. She's a pill. I wouldn't fuck her with a 10-foot dildo." Okay, that's not true. I'd so fuck her, but I wouldn't like it. Yeah, you're right. That's not true either. Matthew sits in the chair across from my desk. I can feel him staring at me again. Then he sighs and says, like it's supposed to be some awe-inspiring revelation,
"Sally Jansen."
I look at him blankly. "Who?"
"Sally Jansen," he says again, then clarifies. "Third grade."
The picture of a small girl with light brown pigtails and thick glasses comes to mind. I nod. "What about her?"
"She was the first girl I ever loved."
"Wait, what? Didn't you used to call her Smelly Sally?"
"Yes," he nods solemnly. "Yes, I did, and I loved her."
Still confused. "Didn't you get, like, the entire third grade to call her Smelly Sally?" He nods again and, trying to sound sage, says,
"Love makes you do some stupid shit."
"I guess so, because didn't she have to leave early twice a week to go to a therapist because you ragged on her so much?" He ponders this a moment.
"Yes, that's true. You know, there's a fine line between love and hate, Drew."
"And didn't Sally Jansen switch schools later that year because, look, the point here, man, is that I liked the girl, loved her. I thought she was awesome, but I couldn't deal with those feelings. I didn't know how to express them the right way." Matthew's not usually this in touch with his feminine side.
"So you picked on her instead?" I ask. "Sadly, yes."
"And this has to do with Kate and me because..." He pauses a beat and then gives me the look. The slight shake of his head, the grimace of sad disappointment. That look right there is worse than a mother's guilt, I swear. He stands, slaps me on the arms, and says,
"You're a smart guy, Andrew. You'll figure it out."
And with that, he leaves. "Yeah, yeah, I know what Matthew was trying to say. I get it, all right. And I'm telling you, straight up, he's crazy. I don't spar with Kate because I like her. I do it because her existence is screwing with the trajectory of my career. She's a nuisance, a fly in my soup, a pain in my ass. As aching as that mother of a bee sting I got on my left cheek at summer camp when I was 11. Sure, she'd be a great lay. I'd ride the Kate Brooks Express any time. But it would never be anything more than a good screw. That's all, folks." "What? Why are you looking at me like that? You don't believe me? Then you're as crazy as Matthew." Chapter 6. Pressure's a funny thing. It makes some people snap. Like the MIT student who decided to take out half the student body with a long-range rifle because he got a B+ on a final. It makes some people choke. Two words. Jorge Posada. Enough said. Pressure makes some people fall, crumble, freeze. I am not one of those people. I thrive on pressure. It propels me, drives me to succeed. It is my element, like water to a fish. I get to work the next day bright and early, dressed to kill, with my game face on. It's go time. Kate and I arrive at my father's office door at 9 a.m. on the dot. I can't help but check her out. She looks good, confident, excited. Apparently, she reacts to stress the same way I do. My father explains that Saul Anderson called to say he would be coming to town ahead of schedule, as in tomorrow night. Lots of businessmen do this. Push meetings up at the last minute. It's a test. To see if you're prepared. To see if you can handle the unexpected. Lucky for me, I am and I can. And then we begin. I insist on ladies first. I watch Kate's presentation like a kid watches a gift under the tree on Christmas Eve. She doesn't know that, of course. My face is the very definition of bored indifference. On the inside, though, I can't wait to see what she's got. And I'm not disappointed. Don't tell anyone I said this. I'll deny it until death. But Kate Brooks is pretty fucking incredible. Almost as good as I am. Almost. She's direct, clear, and persuasive as hell. The investment plans she lays out are unique and imaginative, and destined to make a shitload of money. Her only weakness is that she's new. She doesn't have the connections to necessarily make what she's proposing happen. Like I've said before, part of this business, a big part, is having the inside track. The hidden info and dirty secrets that outsiders can't get to. So although Kate's ideas are strong, they're not altogether viable. Not a slam dunk. Then it's my turn. My proposals, on the other hand, are rock fucking solid. The companies and investments I outline are well known and secure. Granted, my projected profits aren't as high as Kate's, but they're certain, dependable, safe. Once I'm done, I sit beside Kate on the couch. See us there? Kate's hands are folded neatly in her lap, her back straight, a sure, satisfied smile on her lips. I lean back on the couch, my stance relaxed, my own confident smile a mirror image of hers. For those of you out there who think I'm a shitheel, watch carefully. You're going to love this part. My father clears his throat, and I can read the excited gleam in his eyes. He rubs his hands together and smiles. I knew my instincts were right on this one. I can't tell you how impressed I am with what you've come up with, and I think it's obvious who should move forward with Anderson. Simultaneously, Kate and I smirk at each other, gloating triumph written all over our faces. Wait for it. Both of you. Irony's really a bite in the ass, isn't it? Our eyes turn to my father, and the grins drop from our faces faster than an Acme safe in a Roadrunner cartoon. Our shocked voices speak at the same time. What? Excuse me? With your artistic flair for investing, Kate, and your concrete know-how, Drew, you two will be perfect together. An unbeatable team. You can both work on the account. When he signs with us, you can share him, the workload and the bonuses, 50-50. Share him? Share him? Has the old man lost his freaking mind? Would I ask him to share something he's worked his ass off for? Would he let someone else drive his 1965 Cherry Mustang convertible? Would he open his bedroom door and let some other guy screw his wife? Okay, that was too far. I take it back. Considering his wife is my mother. Forget I ever referred to my mother and screwing in the same sentence. That's just wrong. On so many levels. But for the love of God, tell me you see my point. My father must have finally looked at our faces because he asks, "That's not a problem, is it?" I open my mouth to tell him what a major goddamn problem it is. But Kate beats me to the punch. "No, Mr. Evans, of course not. No problem at all."
Wonderful.
He claps his hands together and stands. I've got tea off in an hour, so I'll leave you two to it. You've got until tomorrow night to coordinate your proposals. Anderson will be at Les Bernardins at 7. And then he looks me dead in the face. I know you won't let me down, Andrew. Shit. I don't care if you're 60. When a parent uses your full name, it pretty much sucks all the argument right out of you. No, sir, I won't. And with that, he's out the door. leaving Kate and me sitting on the couch, our expressions dazed, like survivors of a nuclear blast.
No, Mr. Evans, of course not,
I whine. Could you be any more of a kiss-ass? She hisses, shut up, Andrew. Then she sighs. What the hell are we supposed to do now? Well, you could do the noble thing and bow out. Yeah, like that'll happen.
In your dreams.
I smirk. Actually, my dreams involve you bending over something, not bowing. She makes a disgusted sound.
Could you be any more of a pig?
I was kidding. Why do you have to be so fucking serious all the time? You should learn how to take a joke.
I can take a joke, she tells me, sounding insulted.
Yeah, when?
When it's not being delivered by a childish jackass who thinks he's God's gift to women.
I am not childish.
God's gift, on the other hand,
my record speaks for itself.
Oh, bite me.
I wish. Nice comeback, Kate. Very mature.
You're a jerk.
You're an Alexandra. She pauses a second and looks at me blankly.
What the hell does that even mean?
Think about it. It will come to you. I rub my hand down my face. Okay, look, this is getting us nowhere fast. We're screwed. We both still want Anderson, and the only way we're going to get him is if we somehow get our shit together. We've got 30 hours to do that. Are you in or not? Her lips come together in flat-out determination.
You're right. I'm in.
Meet me in my office in 20 minutes, and we'll get to work. I expect her to argue with me. I expect her to ask why we have to meet in my office, why we can't work in her office, like a nagging housewife. But she doesn't. She just says, okay, and leaves the room to get the rest of her things. I'm surprised. Maybe this won't be as bad as I thought.
That is the stupidest fucking idea I have ever heard.
Nope, it's much worse.
I've researched Anderson. He's the old-fashioned type. He's not going to want to go blind staring at your laptop all night. He's going to want something concrete, tangible, something he can take home. That's what I'll give him.
This is a multi-billion-dollar business meeting, not a fifth-grade science fair. I'm not walking in there with a frigging poster board. It's after midnight. We've been in my office for a little over 12 hours. Except for these few minute details, every aspect of our presentation has been banged out, negotiated, compromised. I feel like I just bartered a goddamn peace treaty. By now, Kate has released her hair and lost her shoes. My tie is off, the top two buttons of my shirt open. Our appearance could make things feel friendly, intimate, like an all-night study session in college. If we weren't trying to rip each other's throats open, of course.
I don't give a shit if you agree or not. I'm right about this. I'm bringing the poster board.
I give in. I'm too tired to fight about paper. Fine, just shrink it down. We ordered food a few hours ago and worked through dinner. I had pasta with chicken, while Kate preferred a turkey club with fries on the side. Much as I hate to admit it, I'm impressed. Obviously, she doesn't subscribe to the I can only eat salads in front of the opposite sex rule of thumb a lot of chicks swear by. Who gave women that idea? Like a guy's going to say to his friend, dude, she was one fugly chick, but once I saw her chomping that romaine, I just had to nail her. No man wants to fuck a skeleton, and nibbling crackers and water like a prisoner of war at dinner isn't attractive. It just makes us think about what a cranky bitch you're going to be later on because you're starving. If a guy's into you, a cheeseburger deluxe is not going to scare him away. And if he's not, ingesting all the greens on Peter Cottontail's farm isn't going to change that, trust me. Now, back to the battle royale. I'm doing the talking, I tell her firmly.
No, no way.
Kate,
these are my ideas and I'm presenting them.
She's purposely trying to make me nuts. She's deliberately trying to drive me off the deep end. She's probably hoping I'll throw myself out the window just to get away from the annoyance that is her. Then she'll have Anderson all to herself. Well, her evil little scheme isn't going to work. I'm going to stay calm. I'm going to count to 10. I won't let Kate get to me. Saul Anderson, I say, is an old-fashioned businessman. You just said it yourself. He's going to want to talk to another businessman, not someone he sees as a glorified secretary. That is the most sexist comment I've ever heard. You're disgusting. Calm goes straight out the window and down about 40 stories. I didn't say I thought that way. I said he thinks that way. Fucking Christ almighty. And it's true. I don't care what you're packing in your pants or which way you roll. A pecker, a cooch, or both. It's all the same to me. As long as you get the job done right, that's all that matters. But Kate seems determined to think the worst of me. I push my hands through my hair in an effort to vent some of the frustration that makes me want to shake the shit out of her. Look, this is the way it is. Trying to pretend certain biases don't exist won't make them go away. We have a better shot at signing Anderson if I do the talking. I said no. I don't care what you think. Absolutely not. God, you're so fucking stubborn. You're like a menopausal pissed-off mule. I'm stubborn? Well, maybe I wouldn't have to be if you weren't king of the control freaks. She's right about the control thing. But what can I say? I like things done the right way. My way. I won't apologize for that. Especially not to miss stick up her ass. At least I know when to back off, unlike you. You walk around like an uptight overachiever on crystal meth. By this time, we're both on our feet, less than a foot apart, facing each other. Without her heels, I have a major height advantage, but Kate doesn't seem intimidated. She pokes me in the chest as she argues. You don't even know me. I am not uptight. Oh, please. I've never seen someone who needs to get laid as badly as you do. I don't know what the hell your fiancé is doing with you, but whatever it is, he's not doing it right. Her mouth opens, forming a big ol' O at my little dig against her betrothed. Out of the corner of my eye, I see her hand come up, ready to slap me across the face. This is not the first time a woman has tried to slap me. You're not surprised, are you? Like a pro, I catch her wrist before she makes contact with my cheek and hold her arm down at her side. Gee, Kate, for a woman who claims she doesn't want to screw me, you're certainly eager to make this physical. Her other hand comes up to try and slap me from the other side, but I block her again, and am now securely holding both her hands at her hips. I smirk. Gotta do better than that, baby, if you want a piece of me. I hate you, she yells in my face.
I hate you more, I shout.
Admittedly, not my wittiest comeback, but it was the best I could manage under the circumstances.
Good.
It's the last word she gets out, before my mouth descends on hers, and our lips crash together. Chapter 7. I've kissed hundreds of girls. No, make that thousands. I only really remember a handful of them. But this kiss, this is one I won't forget anytime soon. She tastes. Jesus. I've never done drugs, but I imagine this is what that first snort of cocaine feels like. That first shot of heroin. Goddamn addictive. Our lips clash and move over each other, angry and wet. I can't stop touching her. My hands are everywhere, her face, her hair, down her back, grasping at her hips, pulling her closer, desperate to feel more of her, wanting her to feel exactly what she's doing to me. Needing air, I rip my mouth from hers and attack her neck. I feast on her like a starving man, and that's exactly what I am, ravenous for her. I inhale as I lick, suck, and nibble my way from her jaw to her ear. She's whimpering incoherently, but I get the idea. The sound of her voice, wild and sexy, makes me groan. And her scent. Sweet Christ, she smells like flowers and sugar, like one of those decorative confectionery roses on the top of a cake. Fucking delicious. and her hands aren't idle either. She grasps my biceps, and the heat of her hands seeps through my dress shirt. She scrapes her nails down my back and dips her fingers below the waist of my slacks, first grazing, then cupping my ass. I'm dying. I'm burning. My blood is liquid fucking fire, and I feel like we're going to go up in smoke before we make it to the couch. Kate gasps as I draw her earlobe into my mouth and dance across the flesh below it with my tongue.
Drew, what are we doing?
I don't know, I moan in a rough voice. Just don't stop touching me. She doesn't, and I'm back in her mouth, plunging my tongue into her, sliding it against hers in the same way I'm dying to slide my cock into her wet, welcoming body. I feel her hips push forward against mine, and any blood left in my body descends, making me harder than I've ever been in my life. Weeks of want and frustration are coursing through me. I've brushed with Colgate for far too long, and it's tasted like shit. Do you know how much I want this? Want you? God, Kate, I've fucking dreamed about this, begged for it. You make me... Oh, I can't get enough of you. Her hands are on my chest now, rubbing, scratching, moving down my abs, until one hand brushes against the front of my pants, and I hiss in pure, agonizing pleasure. Before I can inhale, she's stroking my dick through my pants, and I thrust forward. Any semblance of control or finesse is gone. My hands come up to her breasts, and she arches her back to bring them closer. I squeeze, and she moans again. I skim across where I know her nipples are, frustrated by her blouse and bra. I want to tug and pinch those beauties until they're two sharp peaks. Her mouth is on my neck, kissing, and I raise my chin. It's never been like this. I've never been like this. I've never felt so much for any woman, no matter that it's a mixture of anger and lust.
Drew, I can't do this. I love Billy, she pants.
Her confession doesn't affect me like you'd think it would, mostly because she still has one hand on my cock when she says it. Her actions speak the complete opposite of her voice, hands and hips that are pulling me closer, stroking me, pleading for more. That's good, Kate. Fine. Love Billy. Marry Billy. Just please, God, please just fuck me. I don't even know what I'm saying. Don't even know if I'm making sense. One thought, and only one, drums in my head like a primal melody. More. I bring my chin down, wanting to taste her mouth again, but instead of her lips, I make contact with her palm. I open my eyes to find her hand covering my mouth, blocking me. Her chest is heaving, rising and falling in brisk, rapid pants. And then I see her eyes, and I feel like I just took a wrecking ball to the chest, because her eyes are wide with panic and confusion. I try to say her name, but it's muffled by her hand. I hear a sob in her voice as she says,
I can't do this, Drew. I'm sorry. Billy, this job, this is my life, my whole life. I can't.
She's trembling, and suddenly my need, my lust, and my still-raging hard-on are all pushed to the back burner, behind the overwhelming desire to comfort her, to tell her it's okay. Everything will be all right. Anything. I'll say anything to take that look off her face. But she doesn't give me the chance. The moment she takes her hand off my mouth, she runs out the door, and she's gone before I can draw a breath. I should go after her. I should tell her it's okay that she put the brakes on, that this hasn't and won't change anything. Though that's one big fat lie, and we both know it, don't we? But I don't follow Kate, and the reason is simple. Have you ever tried to run with a boner staring up at you? No? Well, it's damn near impossible. I collapse onto the couch and rest my head back. Looking up at the ceiling, I pinch the bridge of my nose with my fingers. How is it that something as simple as sex just became so frigging complicated? I don't know either. Christ, I'm so hard. I want to cry. I'll admit it. I'm not ashamed. I want to weep from the throbbing ache in my groin that will have no relief. The idea of going out and finding a substitute for Kate never even enters my head, because my dick knows what my brain is just starting to admit. There is no substitute for Kate Brooks. Not for me. Not now. I look down at the tent in my lap, the one that shows no indication of going down anytime soon. It's going to be a long, long night. Chapter 8. The next day, Kate doesn't come into the office until 11 o'clock. I don't need to tell you that this is unusual for her. She's avoiding me. I know this because I've done it myself on more than one occasion. Discreetly sneaking over to the other side of the club when I happen to vaguely recognize one of my previous hookups. But to actually be on the receiving end of this? It sucks. I don't get the privilege of speaking with her until 2 when she comes striding into my office, looking drop-dead gorgeous. Her hair is pinned up in what Alexandra would call a French twist. She's wearing a black dress that flows out slightly at the knee, with matching high heels and a black blazer. She puts a small stack of poster board on my desk, her charts and graphs shrunk down to notebook size like we agreed.
Okay, you're right. You should lead with Anderson. I'll be second chair.
She talks like nothing ever happened, like she wasn't quivering in my arms and setting me on fire with her hands in this very office just a few short hours ago. She's all business, completely unaffected, and it pisses me off. Badly. Indifference is not exactly a reaction I'm used to from women. Frankly, it's a little hard to take. I feel my jaw clench as I tell her, good, that's the best way to go. Now, if you haven't guessed, I'm not the touchy-feely type. I'm not one to talk my feelings to death like some new-age meditating freak of nature. But I expected something from her, some acknowledgement of what happened last night, of the attraction that's still pulling at both of us. I thought she would be the one to bring it up. She's a woman, after all. When all I get is silence, I can't help but push. Kate, about last night, she cuts me off.
Last night was a mistake. It will not happen again.
Do you know anything about child psychology? No? Well, here's a lesson for you. If you tell a kid they can't do something, guess what's the first thing they're going to try and do the minute you're not looking? Exactly. Men are the same way. It's so going to happen again. But she doesn't need to know that at the moment.
Okay. Good.
Great, she whispers.
Fine.
Fine's a funny word, don't you think? I don't think there's another like it in the English language that says so much while actually saying so little. How many wives have told their husbands, I'm fine, when they really mean, I want to cut your balls off with a butcher knife? How many men have told their girlfriends, you look fine, when they really mean, you need to go back to the gym and work out? A lot. It's the universal way of saying we're just peachy, when we're really anything but. Fine, I repeat, looking down at the papers on my desk. And then she's out the door, and I spend the next 10 minutes staring after her, replaying last night over and over in my mind. Hey, you know another word that can mean the opposite of what it's supposed to? Fucked. Which is exactly what I'm going to be if I don't get my head out of my ass and back in the game by 7 o'clock tonight. Our dinner meeting is well underway. Although I've done a lot of the talking, it's Kate who has Saul Anderson completely charmed. If I wasn't in such a pissy mood, I'd admit that she's working this meeting like a pro. But I am, so I'm not telling anyone but you. She laughs at some story Anderson just finished telling before he excuses himself to go to the John. I take a drink of my wine, wishing it was whiskey. Kate turns to me, freshman excitement dancing in her eyes.
So this is going really well, isn't it? I mean, I definitely think he's interested, don't you?
I shrug. Depends on what you're trying to sell him.
What are you talking about? I'm selling us, our proposal, our investment firm.
I'm being a prick. Yes, I know. Really? Because it seems like you're offering him something else entirely.
What are you trying to say?
Come on, Kate. You went to Wharton. I think you can figure out exactly what I'm saying.
I have been completely professional.
You'd be more subtle if you ripped open your blouse and shoved your tits in his face. Okay, that was uncalled for, and I actually...